Hey everyone, and welcome back to your daily Linux and open source news show. Today we'll start by talking about a new feature that Linux might get that comes straight from Windows, and that's the blue screen of death. It looks like we're gonna get that on Linux as well. Don't worry, it's not in the sense of we are going to crash all the time and force you to look at a blue screen of death. It's more like if your system has a big error and crashes, you will see a relatively more user-friendly screen instead of a bunch of lines of text that most people can't understand or know what to do about. So this is some work done by a Red Hat engineer, and it gave the Direct Rendering Manager panic infrastructure that handles kernel panics, for example, the ability to display a more user-friendly message, just telling you there's been a kernel panic or unrecoverable error and that you need to reboot. This is a black screen of death instead of blue, but I guess you can probably change the color if you want. This thing also got the ability to display a monochrome logo, either in the form of ASCII art or of an image, and distros will thus be able to brand this kernel panic screen. This work should land in the kernel 6.11, and I can make fun of this thing as much as I want, but I actually think it's not a bad idea. It's always better to drop a user into a low-res screen with a human-readable message than into a TTY with error messages most people won't really understand or know what to do about. Of course, not all distributions will have to adopt this thing if they really don't like it, and I'm also expecting this thing to not stop people from pressing escape, view the correct TTY, view the error itself. You still get your logs, you still get the ability to debug this when you reboot, so it's not taking anything away from anyone, it's just making it easier for newcomers if they encounter a really big kernel panic. That's something I haven't seen on Linux for a long while. I have not had any of these issues in very, very long time, but they can still happen, so might as well have a human readable message. If you don't take away any other underlying power from users, I don't think it's an issue. Now, OpenSUSE unveiled what their new installer will look like. It's called Agama 9, and it uses various technologies that you usually use to build websites, but that's what they're using to build their interface. It does look way more streamlined and legible than the current installer, which is admittedly a pretty big bloated piece of software. The new one has a very clear sidebar on the left with only the major steps in the installation, and there's a sizable main area with all the options and explanation. There also seems to be a hamburger menu and an options menu, or at least an options screen. The network configuration panel, they say, has been revamped a lot, should be easier to read, and it was admittedly very, very convoluted in the current installer to get connected to any network. It did offer you a lot of power to connect through various proxies and things like that, but for a normal person just trying to get a desktop running, connecting to your Wi-Fi network was not easy. The new installer is still compatible with AutoYAST for automating deployments on multiple computers, and it can even import the existing AutoYAST profiles, and it can translate them to the new install process. So people who already spent a lot of time customizing things and having their own workflow for installing OpenSUSE will not have their workflow broken. You can also have more advanced configurations through the command line if you need, and you can already test that new installer with a new live ISO to basically give some feedback to the OpenSUSE team and tell them what you think is missing, not working, or what could be improved. I think it looks good. It looks simple, but it does seem to have the options more advanced users want. Honestly, the current installer for OpenSUSE is maybe one of the worst. I always rag on the Fedora installer because it puts the buttons in all the wrong places, but it's still more legible than the OpenSUSE installer, which looks straight out of the Windows XP era. So, a refresh of this thing is welcome. It is just an installer, but it's the first point of contact a lot of people will have with a Linux distro, and I would not be surprised if some people picked OpenSUSE for their first distro and then backed down in front of the installer because it's really scary if all you want is to create a dual boot and install a second system to try it out. Over the weekend, we also saw the release of Wine 9.12. It has an updated Mono engine to better run .NET programs, and it has a complete rewrite of the Commands.exe engine, the thing that you use to run Windows command line programs on Linux. So people who needed to use a Windows terminal under Linux will now have a more functional experience. I'm not sure if there are that many people who need that and do that. It's probably more for scripts, various weird program installers to have a command line experience in the background that responds more like what Windows would want. But yeah, I guess it's good to have that fixed. You're also getting bug fixes for a bunch of games like Death to Spies, Sudden Strike 3, and a bunch of Assassin's Creed games. I think it's Revelations, Assassin's Creed 1 and 3. So as always, Wine is pretty cool. These fixes will at some point land into Proton, so everyone will be able to benefit straight from Steam, and it should make running Windows programs just a bit easier. I'm interested to know if the command.exe engine rewrite makes, I don't know, certain programs easier to install or even make them work when they didn't previously. And to conclude today's episode, we're gonna talk about Meta's Twitter competitor, which is called Threads. This thing is reinforcing its integration with the Fediverse. You could already make sure that your posts on Threads could be seen by people from the Fediverse, so from Mastodon, for example. But you couldn't see their responses inside of your Threads app, meaning that interactions were pretty minimal because I don't think a lot of Threads users posted something on Threads and then switched to Mastodon to see the replies to their own post. Not sure that this is how things happen. This is now fixed. You will now be able to see what people from the Fediverse have to say to your Threads post. Although you still cannot reply to these replies directly from Threads, so it's not really done or complete just yet. The integration with the Fediverse is also being pushed to a lot more countries. It only worked for people in the US, Canada, and Japan for now. Now it's gonna reach over 100 countries, which should make it a lot more viable. The end goal is apparently to have complete ActivityPub support, ActivityPub being the standard that lets, for example, Mastodon talk with a PeerTube comment, with a Diaspora post, or with a Castopod podcast, like comments and replies, and you can are viewed from one platform to the other. You can follow a podcast from Mastodon or a video channel from Mastodon and things like that. So they want to support this entire protocol, apparently. So as far as I can tell, if you are on Mastodon, you'll be able to just stick with your Mastodon account and you'll still be able to follow and interact with people who use Threads, or you will be able to be followed by people coming from Threads and interact with them as well. Whether you think it's a good thing or that it's an attempt from Meta to embrace, extend, and extinguish the ActivityPub protocol and the Fediverse, that's up to you to decide. I guess instances who really don't want to interact with people from Threads can decide to not federate with Threads. Personally, I have zero interest in Threads as an application. I'm happy with Mastodon right now. It does what I'm expecting it to. I have solid interactions there. People talk to me. I can answer. It works out. I don't care where they come from. If they're from Threads, from another Mastodon instance or any other Fediverse service, I will just not create a Threads account because it's Meta. It's Facebook. I don't want my data going to their databases. So anyway, this will conclude today's episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, thank you all for supporting what I do, and I guess you will hear me in the next one tomorrow. Bye!